Right, sir.
Okay, first point I guess everybody will ask you is about the Ayodhya verdict. Now, there seems to be, you know, obviously both sides don't seem very happy in the heading, but what is your own personal view of the way the verdict was given and handled and everything?
You know, it is a title suit.
Right.
You know, in a title suit, you know, the evidence has to be led, and it was led. And you know, they have the evidence before them, and you know, the governments are not involved in this, because you know, the government of India is only the statutory custodian. Then you know, insofar as the state government also is not involved, that's how it is between those parties. And you know, in fact that court also made, the Lucknow bench of the Allahabad High Court made some attempts for a compromise. None of the parties to the suit agreed for a compromise. Then, you know, again, one of the party came here, why not we compromise? Again, the Supreme Court said, you know, before the Supreme Court, all the parties, you know, belonging to either the Muslim segment or the Hindu segment, they said, no compromise, we want the judgment. Then, you know, naturally, it was reverted back to the Lucknow bench of the Allahabad High Court. Verdict was given. You know, it is not for me to say whether the verdict is correct or not. But, you know, it has to be, you know, seen whether in a title suit, judgment of that kind is appropriate or not, or relevant or not. You know, the perception is that it has gone more on faith than on evidence on the record. So, naturally, the Supreme Court tomorrow, when the appeals will be filed by both parties, this is what I see in the newspaper. There is no question of government of India filing any appeal, because we are not party to this suit. So it will be definitely adjudicated before the Supreme Court, and let us await for this.
Now, do you think the judgment would have been different if, for instance, the mosque had not been demolished in 1992 and the case proceeded as it? Do you think there would have been a different approach on that?
No, it's a question of a position, who was in position at a relevant time. And, you know, what is the evidence on this spot? It will go by that. And, you know, you cannot pass a judgment, you know, over a perception, you know, that, you know, somebody, you know, they have some sentiments. So, I don't think, you know, the sentiment will have much relevance when you adjudicate a matter, particularly in a title suit. Let us not forget that it is a title suit. When it is a title suit, it has to go by evidence which is available on the spot, or the evidence which has been led. But whether judgment is the logical conclusion of the adjudication of the title suit or not is a matter which the Supreme Court will have to decide.
No. Do you think it would have differed in any way if, for instance, the mosque had not been demolished and it still existed?
Yeah.
And do you think there would have been a differing judgment in that sense?
Well, you know, it was a fact that mosque did exist. Whether it was, you know, the question is that, you know, the again question, you know, going back to that, you know, whether before the mosque there something else was there. But the fact is that there is a mosque. Even in the evidence which is led, they said there are some ruins. There is no indication that, you know, there was a temple. That is also there. It's a matter of fact. It is evidence. So, ultimately, the existence of a mosque is a matter of fact.
And the demolition of a mosque is also
is a matter of fact.
Do you think that because of the demolition, in some ways, you know, shouldn't it have been different if say, 1992, no demolition happened and the title suit proceeded as it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think the judgment would have differed in that sense because there is an existing structure?
Naturally. Possession is the 99% of proof.
Right. But in some ways, BJP is looking at it as an exoneration of what they did in 19... Not exoneration, but say, 1992 seems to be, submerged, whatever they did by this judgment. There is a different kind of a feeling that, okay, that, you know, there is some sort of judicial sanction to what had happened. Is that your sort of thing?
I don't think, you know, this could be construed as a judicial sanction. And if it cannot be treated that, you know, it is a regularization of the aggression made.
Right.
Aggression made or a demolition made.
Right.
And, you know, demolition being regularized by this kind of a judgment. No, right. I don't think one can read the judgment in that context.
Right. You think that's a separate issue that needs to be...
Well, it is already there. Right. You know, demolition and other questions, there are cases against Mr. Advani.
Right.
It is already pending. So this is, cannot be linked up to that.
This is not a judicial pardon.
No, it can't be. No, they have no, even the judiciary has no power to do it.
Right. Right. So that case you say is divorced from...
I know, it is absolutely, this is not a, you know, what is sought to be done illegal cannot be legalized by a judgment. And this is not that.
Right. That demolition is illegal and that...
Demolition is illegal.
Right.
Demolition is a fact.
Right.
Matter of fact. It right. cannot be denied today, no, there was no demolition.
Right. Well, moving to a more, another current issue, which is what is happening in Karnataka. And clearly the anti-defection law that had been passed many, two decades back is under question. What is your own viewpoint of the way the entire episode was handled, the speaker and the, you know, the entire process that went on in Karnataka? It's your home state. So.
Yeah. You know, the first time, you know, when matter was moved, you know, the that means vote of confidence was, the governor directed the chief minister to
right.
take the vote of confidence. On that, as on that day, you know, the he was reduced to minority.
Right.
It is, there are two components. One is, he was definitely below 213.
Right.
213 is the real, out of 224, is the real right. majority. He lost the majority.
Right.
Then thereafter, even to that extent, you know, in fact, definitely Congress, Independence, Rebel BJP, and also the BJDS, all put together, they outnumbered the BJP number.
Right.
So he had to seek for a vote of confidence.
Right.
There is a proper justification of the order of the
right.
as governor. You know, but on that day, what happened? It is a question. You know, the House did not meet. Just in the early hours, he passed an order,
right.
Speaker passed an order of expulsion.
Right.
You know, Speaker is a Speaker when he is presiding over a House.
Right.
You know, yes, you know, there is no whip issued against these people to do this or not,
right.
or do this or not to do this. Party had not issued the whip against the BJP.
Right.
And in a mere presence of saying that, you know, they want... They have no confidence in the leader of the party.
Right.
Not a party as such. That doesn't amount that, you know, the yes, they have left the party,
right.
deserted the party,
right.
or voted against the party.
Right.
There was no cause of action at all.
Right.
In the absence of this cause of action, when they were all issued notice,
right.
you remember, the BJP, rebel BJP, and also the independents had been issued with the notice of, have been given. The notice to participate in right. the assembly.
Right.
They should have been legitimately allowed to participate.
Right.
And you know, at that point of time, the 65 of the assembly, the independent members, and 11 of the, they were expelled.
Right.
And you know, the what happened on the House? Within 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 minutes, everything was over. The Speaker just called the Chief Minister to, you know, read out the motion. He read out the motion. Then, you know, there was commotion. And, you know, he said the motion has been carried. You know, there is a procedure involved. Even if it is a question of a voice vote, he has to say yeah or no. That is not there on record. That meant the vote of confidence was a washout. There was absolutely no vote of confidence taken on that day. It's a real question.
But was the governor right in firstly recommending president's rule, then changing and saying now take another vote of confidence? It became a theatre of the observer.
No, the question is that he was, it is for his wisdom. I can't question, you know, whether he is right or not. He asked the chief minister to take the vote of confidence.
Right.
Fact is, chief minister did not take the vote of confidence.
Right.
Then what remains?
Right.
That means yes, he has gone according to the parameters laid down in the Bombay case
by
asking him to take the vote of confidence.
That's right.
And here is a chief minister. I'm not talking about the speaker. Here is a chief minister. Ultimately, he could not take vote of confidence.
Right.
That did not result in vote of confidence. then what happens?
Yes.
I'm just telling
you. Sure.
I don't think Bommai case will prevent him, prevent the governor making such a recommendation.
Right.
It is nothing unconstitutional about it.
Right. But then the next thing he says is go back and take another vote of confidence on that matter.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that's a legitimate vote? Because given the fact that 14 or 15 of these people have gone to court.
One opportunity, no, that's not the king.
Yeah.
The one question is that, you know, the vote of confidence was not taken.
Right.
Another interpretation is that, you know, vote of confidence opportunity has given. Should you have given another opportunity?
That's right.
That's a question.
Should he or should he not?
No, that's another matter.
Right. What is your
Normally, he did not have given another chance. There is no scope at all.
Right.
Moreover, within 6 months, you cannot bring another vote of confidence.
Right.
That is also the rule.
Right.
But, you know, in his magnanimous approach.
Right.
Of course, BJP doesn't recognize that kind of a magnanimous approach.
Right.
And, you know, he has given magnanimous approach. And all right, when it was not a vote of confidence,
right,
in accordance with the constitutional provision, right, or the rules of the assembly, then, you know, he says, in the absence of a vote of confidence taken in the first instance,
right,
so he must have thought it is for the governor. I am not questioning the jurisdiction of the governor to issue, but in his wisdom, he gave another chance.
Right.
And when he has given another chance, what happened on the floor of the house?
Right.
It was subject to the decision of the High Court.
High Court. Right.
At the same time, you should know the position again altered. Every time he issues an order, first time he issued an order,
right,
position altered.
Right.
That means there is a horse trading by the BJP.
Right.
Another time also, is again in between the interregnum period, position is altered,
right,
MLAs.
Right.
It amounts to horse trading,
right,
by the ruling power.
Right.
In the light of that, everything is vitiated.
Right. What will be now happen if the High Court gives a verdict for or against? What is the position you think would be? Can another vote of, supposing the High Court says that the disqualification, upholds the disqualification, that's over then?
Yeah.
What happens then? Or if it doesn't and says already go back?
There are two factors now.
Right.
The later development is now today, it's a fact there is a horse trading.
Right.
MLAs have been asked to resign.
Right.
And, you know, now there is a, you know, the sting operation also.
Right.
Where the MLAs, it is a proof,
right,
of the fact that, you know, the MLAs have been given money,
JD MLA,
offered money,
right,
and earlier MLA by the ruling party, that has become proved.
Right.
Having proved that, you know, that kind of a horse trading,
right,
whether this government has not only the ethical power to continue,
right,
don't you think that when the matter is pending before the Supreme High Court,
right,
and when he had sent one recommendation for the,
right,
imposing the president rule,
right,
and no confidence says, a vote of confidence was not taken in the first instance.
Right.
And the second is vitiated because of the horse trading.
Right.
In the light of this, you know, it is for the governor to judge whether there is proper, whether the government is in a appropriate, you know, in a constitutionally formed government.
What happens about the court? Should the governor wait for the court's verdict that is now reserved for judgment and therefore it will take a couple of days before it comes out? What would be the outcome of the court?
You know, the governor can act on his own also. He is a constitutional authority. The government has to be run in accordance with the provisions of the constitution. When there are vote of confidence before the house and that is altered at time to time by the very much visible hands of the ruling power, it is ultimately for the governor to appropriately act.
Supposing the court rules that the disqualification was illegal, what would be the course of action? Does that mean the government should fall? What is the...
Government has to fall.
They can go for appeal, they can say all that.
That is always available for any,
right,
any party.
But you think if the court votes and upholds and calls it an illegal thing, then the government should go?
No, in a normal course, he has no right to continue.
Supposing the court says, all right, this is fine, what the speaker did, then what happens?
You know, then, you know, the question still remains whether there is a horse trading or not.
All right.
whether the government continues on the basis of the act of illegal act of horse trading or on their own.
Alright. So you are saying that it is not over even if the court upholds the disqualification?
Yeah, correct.
And also then they have the right to appeal or whatever it is.
That is always available for any party.
But what's your overall, you were a chief minister of the state, when you see the state now, what's your sort of sense?
Absolutely shameless. Man and it in the open trade-off is done by paying money.
Right.
You know, the paying money. And the ministers flaunting the MLAs, go to the speaker. And belonging to the other party, they take the MLAs to the speaker, make them resign. And make them to accept the resignation.
Right.
That way again the speaker cannot, you know, immediately accept the resignation.
Right.
He has to give opportunity.
Right.
And you know whether the resignation is given by coercion, force or other means, adopting the illegal means, it is the duty of the speaker to verify it. But he instantaneously accept the resignation of the MLA.
Right.
See what? And you know this is never done. That too in the history, this is a very bad history in the, I think I must tell, the darkest days in the annals of the history of Karnataka.
Moving away from Karnataka, I mean, we soon know this thing. The other big issue has been the judge's appointment issue. And there are two issues in this. One, of course, is whether the current system of collegium, which many people describe as division of spoils among the Supreme Court and for lower court, whether that system needs a change, and what is your view? You've been talking about it, and what do you think needs to be done?
You know, all said and done, you know, the Indian judiciary still enjoys the highest reputation world over. We are the largest judiciary.
Right.
But you know, this debate is on right from 94, 96, whether the present system of collegium is right or wrong.
Right.
It's a matter which is being debated all over the country.
Right.
Even the jurist, you know, the former chief, the Supreme Court judges, everyone says that, you know, this is not a correct system.
Right.
So, of course, the government is thinking, you know, whether we should reconsider this issue, put a system in place so that there will be transparency, objectivity, and the people should not get an impression, you know, that the judges are appointed, you know, by the collegium, you know, in a non-transparent way. But at the same time, I don't say that, you know, everything is bad. You know, it's not that easy to comment upon.
But you are contemplating some changes in this as a...
No, we are just thinking, you know, what should be done. Some changes are necessary, even according to the judges, you know, the judgment given in 94 by Justice J.S. Verma, and according to him also, ultimately the system which is put in place thereafter is not the exact system which has been contemplated by the judiciary itself.
So this division of spoils issue continues to...
No, I don't say the division of spoils, you know, I don't say that, I don't subscribe to their views.
Right.
But you know, there should be a better system which needs to be changed. That is a perception, is the national consensus.
Do you have any particular ideas?
No, I don't want to spell out because, you know, it needs a lot of deliberation. Right. Ultimately, the system which we would like to contemplate should be much, much better system, which should not be tomorrow, you know, again commented upon by anyone.
Okay.
And we would like to have a system, you know, which is state of art, you know. The world over, many of the countries have been appointing judges in a different way. And ultimately, you know, we need to have a system which is one step definitely above the system adopted by any other progressive country.
Moving to, of course, there was a proposal by Justice Venkatachalaya a long back of the interchangeability of the Chief Justice with Supreme Court thing. Do you think that's a, you know, something that you need to...
I don't subscribe to that. You know.
Okay, why not?
You know, it is never done and it should not be done. Once a judge comes to the Supreme Court, you know, as a judge of the Supreme Court, that's highest court.
Right.
You know, sending back again to the High Court or changing the place from the High Court Chief Justice to the Supreme Court judge. I don't think it is very much a palatable proposition.
Okay. But one of the other issues has been this, and in fact the Tribune has been carrying this debate, which is, should you appoint an outside Chief Justice to, say, Karnataka Court, rather than choose the higher, you know, the person who is the best among the current justices to elevate him to the Chief Justice, because the feeling is that an outside Chief Justice doesn't have the time to really get into it before his tenure gets over?
It may be because, you know, the period, you know, the that is why, you know, the to stabilize the administration in the High Court system, we have already, you know, the proposed a constitutional amendment to enhance the age of the High Court judges from 62 to 65. Once this 62 to 65 is done, that kind of a grievance can be got over.
But what is your own feeling? Do you think Chief Justice from within the state, who served the state, is in a better position to be rather than an outside?
It's all a time-tested procedure.
Right.
I think as far as that is concerned, I think, you know, the better to put a person from outside the state.
Right.
This is what we are taught. You know, even then, you know, nothing prevents the Supreme Court or the government to post the Chief Justice of the same state. We are not prevented from that.
Right.
There is no, it is not a hard and fast rule
right.
as such. You know, can be done, but the question is, you know, by and large, the system is evolved for number of years that, you know, outsider is put as a Chief Justice. That doesn't mean that you cannot post an outsider, I mean, insider as a Chief Justice.
But by tradition or norm, it is kept. But your thing is, it's better to have an outside.
By and large, that is the practice, and the practice has really served the purpose. It's a time-tested practice.
And so you think it's okay to sort of.
Yeah.
You're more inclined to allow it to continue rather than make the changes.
We are not contemplating any changes, but at the same time, as I already told you, there is no hard and fast rule or no law.
That's
no
right.
law. It is only a matter of convention.
That's right.
And it is being practiced for the High Supreme Court, and the government has also endorsed to it. There is no conflict with regard to that proposition.
Moving to the vacancies, there are almost a third of the, you know, posts vacant among judges.
Mm.
What needs to be done about that? And are you know, trying to hasten the process, speed up?
You know, again, this is the question of a, you know, the collegium system, which is sometime, you know, holding it back. I think this is why, you know, it is linked up with the system that we are likely to evolve for appointment of judges.
And you think that will change?
Yes.
What about the other big issue is this business of Kap panchayats and the legality being given to them? You have been talking about it. And what is your...
Whether it is a Kap panchayat or any, of course the people say that Kap panchayat is a thing, you know, which they are doing much better work. And of course, this is some of them, you know, may indulge in, you know, ultimately, you know, provoke the, you know, the killing of persons by parents themselves or the guardians themselves. It is very cruel and barbaric. You know, ultimately, no one can kill them, you know, just because they have transgressed some family traditions and the convention. You are not entitled to kill. The killing is not done. You know, to that extent, you know, that is a system, that's a crime, you know, that needs to be punished. But at the same time, you know, we need to, because after all, the GOM, group of ministers, are looking into this act, and, you know, we have been talking to the chief ministers, particularly from Haryana and many other states, and they are coming and giving us evidence that, you know, the Kap panchayat as such is not illegal, but at the same time, the, you know, the provoking for a this kind of a murder, it is illegal and crime. I think we are examining this matter. Ultimately, we may come out with, you know, the calling Kap panchayat as such is illegal may not be that conducive, but at the same time, the resultant murder, you know, which happens, it has to be definitely bifurcated and said this is a murder. Whoever is responsible, together or conjointly, you know, they will have to be held responsible.
But you are sort of inclined to give Kap panchayat a certain legal status in some ways.
I don't think we can, you know, it's a practice, you know, I don't think any legal status can be given.
Right.
Mm. That's a acknowledge certain fact.
But
and
the GOM will get into what then?
Pardon?
What aspect of the Kap
panchayat? GOM, you know, we definitely get into the, which, you know, any decision of the Kap panchayat or any panchayat whatsoever.
Right. Whether it has legitimacy or not.
You know, killing the people or provoking killing, it has no legitimacy. It has to be firmly dealt with.
But other aspects of it, you're trying to give some legitimacy?
No. I don't think, you know, the under law we can give a legitimacy.
In terms of...
No. It is only a convention, right. Some tradition. You know, in our country, it is not the law alone which governs the life,
right.
You know, the lives of the people. It is right. Also the customs convention, as you know, the Kodagu also.
That's right.
There are certain customs. In my place, there are certain customs. In Dakshina Kannada and Udupi.
Right.
You know, that is acknowledged. People don't violate that. But at the same, there are also certain personal laws.
Right.
You know, certain sometime some of the conventions and the traditions have been transformed into personal laws.
Right.
And when it is converted into personal law, that legitimacy is given. That's it.
Okay. Moving, of course, to this enemy property bill, which seems to raise some controversy in the cabinet. What is your view on it? I mean, there seems to be your...
No, I don't think, you know, as far as the... No, Enemy Property Act. Right. But, of course, there is a view,
right,
perception held by somebody. Why should you call it an enemy property?
That's right.
You know, it is not, you know, the...
Right.
You know, it is there, you know, for example.
Right.
There are certain, you know, the, for example, the father has left for Pakistan.
That's right.
His children remained, wife
right.
remained sometime.
Right.
How can you call it as a enemy property?
Right.
Same thing can happen, you know.
That's
that is
right.
why the calling it as an enemy property, there is some perception.
Right.
I think there is some legitimacy also in that.
Right.
So this is a, this we have to distinguish it.
Right.
Distinguish it. You can't say that, you know, he is a citizen here.
Right. That's right.
You must appreciate he continued to remain here.
That's
despite
right.
his another brother leaving or the father right. leaving, somebody is leaving. Despite he remained in India. He is a part and parcel of the Indian citizenship.
Right.
So these are all the things which we looked into it. That's why, you know, the bill which we have brought, you know, first it was the ordinance was one. There
right.
was some dispute. Then we re-examined the matter.
Right.
Then ultimately, in the bill which we have now passed, there is no controversy at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is not being called the enemy properties?
No. It is. Now it is called as enemy property only. But we are not changed the title. But at
right.
the same time, you know, this is a debate, I am telling you.
Right. But the bill per se, you think you are satisfied with the way it is?
No, because we have looked into the every aspect of it. You know,
right.
as I have told you, know, there are certain left peer family left behind.
Right.
What is the crime they have committed?
Right.
They cannot be called as enemies.
Right.
The property, these are all the concerns and the issues,
right.
which, you know, as any other citizen of the country, they are also entitled to hold the property.
Right.
This is the basic right which we need to recognize while enacting a law like this.
Okay. Moving to, of course, this caste census, which created a lot of
controversy. Yeah,
now the government seems to be.
Mm.
What's the viewpoint on this?
No, it is very, it's very simple.
Right.
You know, the 11th five-year plan, you must see the preamble.
Right.
What do they say? Fastest growth, inclusive growth.
Right.
When you speak about the inclusive growth,
right.
that means, you know, who are those people who have been left out
right.
from the mainstream of the society, and for the economic benefits and social benefits.
Right.
And if they are, they are backward classes,
right.
many of them. And you know, the ultimately, you know, we give a lot of programs for the backward classes.
Right.
Planning Commission gives some program, Social Welfare Department, Rural Development, many departments they give. And the, in fact, according to the Mandal Commission, there is also reservation ordered. And whom do you give that reservation? If there is a, you know, the caste is no doubt a cancer in the
right.
society. But at the same time, when you are affected by cancer, you know, you cannot operate the entire body,
right,
right and left.
That's right.
You have to operate that portion after a proper diagnosis.
Right.
How the diagnosis is done?
Right.
It is by collecting the data and, you know, who are the backward classes and make that data. If that data, if you are going to extrapolate from the 1936 census,
right.
as on today, is a total distortion. And we do that even as politicians when we give the tickets,
right.
we extrapolate 1936, give some margin, go on calculating as on today, give the day there, and whoever is a powerful to manipulate that kind of a
right.
statistic,
right.
you know, his community, it may not be 5%, he will blot it at 25%, 30%.
Right.
Then, you know, political distributive justice will go, economic distributive justice will go, social distributive justice will go. That means just because last 80 years it was not done, that doesn't mean when we have to, you know, see the micro aspect of this sociology, we need to have these statistics. This is a basic requirement.
Okay.
And otherwise, we are just building castle upon only in the air,
right.
not on the basic statistics. I think we are getting, by ordering the caste census, we are getting into the basics of the societal picture.
Okay.
Which
the BJP would always like to raise up.
Mm.
What is the viewpoint on that? I mean, here is a person who's caused a bomb, you know, one knows direct parliament attack. He wants to this thing. Why
it
is
has, you know, it has to be taken in a wider concept.
Right.
How many people are hanged in this country?
Right.
Forget about Afzal Guru.
Mm.
You know, all this, I think only one since about 20 years.
Right.
Hanging. That is Dhananjay, I think.
Right.
Last hanging was done on Dhananjay. You know, that means to say any country is slow in hanging people,
right.
even though the capital punishment is given.
Right.
it has to be taken in that context. And you know, there is a procedure involved. After the mercy petition is filed, there are certain procedure involved. We cannot single out and, you know, just because he is Absal Guru, pick him up, hang him. You can't do like that. Mm. After all, you know, we are dealing with a person's life. Mm. So, the process has to gone into. Moreover, how many people get the capital punishment in the court? And it should be rarest of the rare cases, they get a capital punishment.
But it appears, no, terrorism is an extraordinary act, which is different from
that. You should then in that case, you know, you cannot.
No. On this particular
terrorism case. Under the act of terrorist or the any act connected with the terrorism, there is no penal clause.
Right.
It has to come under IPC.
Right.
Then, if you want that, you know, terrorist will have to be given the capital punishment, we have to provide it in the Terrorist Act or the law relating to the terrorism.
Right.
There is no such thing. Substantive clause, again, you have to go back to the Indian Penal Code. And it will go into the stream of judicial process.
POTA and things like that, you don't want to bring some of this into it?
No, that's another matter, you know, whether we should bring it or not. But, you know, any country, you know, when the laws are built and structured, you know, it is not done like that.
Right. Mm. Finally, of course, looking at, you have a huge pendency of cases.
Yeah.
1 crore in the High Court, pending 3.5 crore in the other places. And infrastructure. Two issues that we think belong.
That is what, you know, we have to put in systems.
Right.
We can't just directing the disposal of the cases by judges is not going to serve the purpose.
Right.
That is why now we are going on systems, and we are 13th Finance Commission has provided certain modalities and the system to be adopted for the justice delivery system. We are now putting in place. Then we are also providing infrastructure subordinate courts. 87% of the pendency is in the subordinate courts. We are addressing this question there. We are also coming out with a litigation policy with which, you know, we network everything and disposal will be done. So there are several methods. We are now in, I think within a year or so, the system will be in place and ultimately it will be so automatic, ultimately the pendency will come down.
But that means more judges, more judges, more infrastructure courts, or what is the...
Yeah, problem? Systems.
Okay.
More than the IT-enabled system.
So you can dispose of...
dispose of the cases.
Okay. Yes. Final question, corruption...
E-court, e-court, paperless court.
Right.
These are all the methods we are adopting.
Final question is corruption in the judiciary, and you've had two cases of justices...
Yeah, yeah.
...which are pending, whether it's Nirmal Yadav, whether it is Justice Soumitra Sen or even Dinakaran.
Mm.
What needs to be done on this front?
No, that is why, you know, we have now brought in... this Judges Standard and Accountability Bill.
Right.
You know, no person with any tainted character can become a judge. Even if he becomes a judge, at no point of time he can commit any mistake. You know, this kind of a bill coming, accountability built into this, perhaps this perception will disappear.
Because otherwise impeachment is a
huge...
Hello? Impeachment is a big, you think is a long procedure.
I know. No, impeachment has not happened here in this country. You know, that's why, you know, this kind of a bill will take care of this.
How quickly do you think you could get this?
No. Now it will be introduced in the parliament and perhaps immediately it will come out.
All right. Mm. Okay. Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you.
Much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Come. But we have to go now. I'll talk to you later. Come.